There's a whole cult of DFW. The TV show Parks and Recreation did an episode that was an homage to him. The Simpsons based an episode on one of his essays. And then there's the new movie about him. But what is it about his work that continues to inspire such devotion? Steve Paulson asked Stephen Byrne, the scholar who's editing Wallace's letters.
Stephen, I can't think of any other contemporary novelist who would become the subject of a big Hollywood film. How do you explain the continuing fascination with David Foster Wallace?
Well, I think there are probably two reasons why Wallace has an unusual level of fame. First of all, I think that unlike a lot of other writers, there's something about Wallace's work that requires more than usual readerly devotion. If you sit down with Infinite Jest, you can't sort of read just a chapter or two in a busy waiting room and expect to maintain the thread of it.
You almost have to be a true fan to read his fiction, at least.
It inspires that, yeah. It requires it and it inspires it.
Now, you said there's another reason why he's so famous.
I think there's a sense in which Wallace always stood for something larger than just his writing. When he published his first book, The Broom of the System, he pitched it to his agent in terms of a growing interest in very young writers, and he was in his 20s. And as he goes on through his career, Infinite Jest, obviously by sheer scale, it attracted a lot of attention that's, again, separate from what's in the book itself. The fact of the book, the size of the book, began to attract attention.
Well, I mean, there are a lot of people who know this book, Infinite Jest, who've never read it, but they know about it. And they're kind of fascinated by the figure of David Foster Wallace. I mean, he somehow became kind of a cultural icon and more than just a famous writer.
Yeah. I mean, he has a global reach as well that seems almost unparalleled. There was a book published in Finland just this year called What Does David Foster Wallace Mean? and I was in Illinois earlier this year.
Where Wallace grew up.
Yeah, where Wallace grew up. I was in Bloomington Normal, where he was an English professor for many years. And it turned out that there are Italians who organize sort of tour groups to come on a kind of pilgrimage to see scenes from Wallace's life. Wallace does seem to have a magnetic attraction, a certain gravity to him that the other writers don't.
Are you part of the Wallace fan club?
I don't know. I'm not part of any online groups or anything like that.
Let me put it another way. Are you a Wallace obsessive?
You know, I have been a Wallace obsessive. When I first read Infinite Jest in the mid-1990s, it was obviously, from the very first pages, such a great book, a really major breakthrough. And it requires obsession to make sense of it. It requires you to recall tiny details across hundreds of dense, disorienting pages. But it can be a claustrophobic world to live within, the world of Wallace's fiction. I, at least, sometimes feel that I need to get out of that world.
Take me back to the time when Infinite Jest was published, and it really was this major literary phenomenon and kind of heralded the breakout of this writer who a lot of people recognized as having some sort of genius. What was unique about that book?
Well, if we go back to the 1990s, there were a lot of great books published in that decade, yet at the time, the perception of fiction in the 1990s was quite depressed. The New York Times Book Review in 1992 ran a front page feature on the rise of hypertext fiction under the inflammatory banner, the end of books. Infinite Jest appears in these depressed times as a work that seems almost deliberately designed to answer complaints about the fate of American fiction. The scale, the inventiveness, its vitality on a page-by-page basis made it, particularly in that time, a landmark in writerly ambition.
Now, we've been talking about the devotion, the fandom that David Foster Wallace still inspires. We haven't talked about how he died. I mean, he was clearly some sort of a tortured soul. I mean, struggled with, at times, crippling depression for much of his life. Of course, killed himself. How much does that play into the fascination with this writer?
There are two groups of people. There are the people who were reading him a long time before he committed suicide, and there are the people who come to him only through the shadow of his suicide. For the people who already knew his books, I think the tenor of some of his fiction has changed significantly. There are parts of Infinite Jest where Wallace talks very directly about depression. At the time, certainly when I first read them, they seemed to be simply descriptions, but they now have the flavor of documents of personal torment. I certainly think that Wallace has come to stand in the media more generally. He's come to index larger cultural fantasies about the tormented artist. And a lot of, I think, media outlets want the name David Foster Wallace, like that of Sylvia Plath or Virginia Woolf, to stand for that torment.
Does he still cast a huge shadow over the literary scene?
Yes, I think he does. I mean, his influence is remarkable. He appears as a character in a lot of other books. He's somewhere in the background of Richard Powers's novel Generosity, Jonathan Franzen's Freedom, Jeffrey Eugenides's The Marriage Plot. Both seem to have a character that's closely based upon Wallace.
And these were all writers who were roughly contemporaries of him.
I mean, who knew him, and
he turns up in their fiction then.
He does. I mean, I think more generally, his voice, I think, has a significant influence on contemporary writers on a sentence-by-sentence basis. Here's an example of one of those sentences. And this is picked more or less at random from Infinite Jest. And it's about 700 pages in. Maybe it's the fact that most of the arts here are produced by world-weary and sophisticated older people and then consumed by younger people who not only consume art but study it for clues on how to be cool and hip. And keep in mind that for kids and younger people, to be hip and cool is the same as to be admired and accepted and included and so unalone. What seems to me to be important about this sentence is the way in which it constantly qualifies itself, the way it refuses a sort of single meaning, the idea that answers aren't simple. The word "and" appears 8 times in that sentence, and that's what gives it a lot of its motion. And that, I think, is one of the things that's particularly special about Wallace's work, that this is a writer who believed in complexity and whose sentences constantly tried to move away from simplicity, to try and capture that movement of thought where we're constantly qualifying or adding and changing the substance of what goes before.
Stephen Byrne is a literary scholar at the University of Glasgow. He's now editing the selected letters of David Foster Wallace. He talked with Steve Paulson.